And thank you for joining me. More on me at briansussman.com. This is episode 233. This and the next several episodes are going to be devoted to unpacking key components of my new book, Climate Cult, Exposing and Defeating Their War on Life, Liberty, and Property. I wrote the book with the intention of making it the most comprehensive book ever written on the global warming movement. In order to defeat the agenda, the schemes they have planned, I believe you need to fully know your enemy. And as such, in Climate Cult, I share with you the very roots of the environmental movement and their ultimate intentions. So it's a comprehensive book. Wherever possible, I use primary source documents. This is incredibly important because with primary source documents, we can see exactly what the planners of this movement have been intending now for a very long time. I want to begin with the title of the book because some would say, my gosh, a little overdramatic, don't you think? A little melodramatic, Climate Cult. Well, the environmental movement at large, and especially the climate change component of that movement, has all of the hallmarks of a cult. And I will explain that right now in a PowerPoint presentation. So let me go to the first slide. And by the way, for those of you who are listening to this podcast as opposed to watching it on YouTube or Rumble, I will do my best to articulate what is being seen on the screen so you're really not missing out on anything. It has all the components of a cult, beginning with impending doom, and then personal transgression. You are a carbon sinner. Your carbon footprint is too large. Your lifestyle is destroying the planet. Oh, but wait, there's also in this cult, like you find in most cults, absolution. In other words, your carbon sins can be forgiven, so to speak, by way of adopting a lifestyle that's more in keeping with a carbon-free world. In other words, you could do all sorts of things, and we'll discuss some of these. You could buy the Tesla that you can't afford. You could go vegan. You could live in stack and pack housing, a small condo or whatever. And there's the utopian promise. Eventually, the promise, which comes from the World Economic Forum, is you will own nothing and you will be happy. It also has an ecclesiastic order. The climate change movement has high priests. It has prophets. It has its theologians. It has its millions of teachers in the classrooms throughout America and the developed world. It has a catechism that they all learn to follow. There is no room in the climate cult for your own opinion. You have to believe and embrace their dogma. Otherwise, you will be called a denier. And they have their messengers. Their messengers are everyone from various politicians to talking heads in the news and the media at large. Let me go to this first guy right here. He is clearly a high priest in this movement. This is former Vice President Al Gore. I want to read to you something that he said on July 24th, 2022, on NBC's Meet the Press. Now, this is the impending doom that they preach. And he's a high priest in their movement. The climate deniers are really in some ways similar to all of those almost 400 law enforcement officers in Uvalde, Texas, who were waiting outside an unlocked door while the children were being massacred. They heard the screams, they heard the gunshots, and nobody stepped forward. This is wild rhetoric. Can you imagine someone who's just a little bit off mentally, emotionally, hearing something like that? The trouble that this could bring to an already troubled mind. And what's absolutely disgusting is, you know, these messengers in the media would never, ever disagree with the vice president. No one on Meet the Press that day said, you know, Mr. Al Gore, don't you think that was a little over the top, comparing climate deniers to the police in Uvalde, Texas, who did nothing while there was a massacre going on? No, no one would dare question Al Gore. And they would never dare question many of these high people in this climate movement, like this next person. This is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Instagram Live, February 24th, 2019. She said, our planet is going to hit disaster if we don't turn this ship around. And so it's basically like there's a scientific consensus that the lives of children are going to be very difficult. And it does lead, I think, young people to have a legitimate question, you know, is it okay to have children? So again, this is a representative of the United States of America. She's in the Congress, and she is like a rock star in the minds of so many, saying these absolutely outrageous things regarding global warming and climate change. And nobody calls her on it. No one calls her on it. But it's not just Al Gore, and it's not just AOC. The list continues, and I'll just give you a few of the people that I talk about in the book, Climate Cult. This is UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, July 27, 2023. Climate change is here. It is terrifying, and it is just the beginning. Children swept away by monsoon rains, families running from the flames, workers collapsing in scorching heat. The era of global warming has ended. The era of global boiling has arrived. Where were the fact checkers? Last I checked, boiling is 212 Fahrenheit. Again, wild rhetoric from the guy who runs the United Nations, or is the Secretary General of the United Nations. But the United Nations has been at the heart. They've been writing the template for the global warming movement, for the climate change agenda, for now decades, as I prove in the book and as I'll share in just a moment. But what's really interesting, and most people don't realize this, and I have the source documents for this as well, the United Nations, bureaucrats, despots, reckless leaders from around the world, if you look at the United Nations Humanitarian Council, most of the members are dictators. It's awful. But the United Nations does have a lot of sway in this environmental movement. However, their sway got some serious mojo when they officially partnered with the World Economic Forum in 2019. They officially partnered with the people from Davos. This is legacy money. And many of the people that go to Davos are quite talented when it comes to creating businesses and running things. So those feckless bureaucrats at the UN now have partnered up with people who can move things and make things happen. Not many people are aware of this. The cult also has its theologians, like this guy. Some of you might recognize him. His name is Michael Mann. Michael Mann he's a very sensitive individual, and he likes to sue people, so I really have to measure my words carefully here. But Michael Mann is the quote-unquote scientist who massaged the entire climate record, the temperature record of the Earth, using wild mathematical gymnastics and replacing data and adding data and essentially massaging the temperature record to make it look as if this is the warmest weather ever, the hottest weather ever. This man is a left-wing activist. If I were to say he was a socialist or a communist or a progressive, that would be my particular opinion. My opinion. I don't think I can be sued for stating my opinion. And who knows, maybe he would embrace those Maybe you would embrace those monikers entirely. I'm not sure. The only time I've ever criticized him on Twitter, of course, he blocked me from ever looking at his Twitter feed again. That's how sensitive it appears he can be on some of these issues. But here's what he actually said. Listen to this. This is a quote-unquote scientist saying, there is empirical, peer-reviewed support for the conclusion that climate deniers in general are truly awful human beings. So he's stating to all those who follow him and think so highly of him, especially these broad-minded thinkers who are convinced that the climate is changing and it's the result of human activity, specifically the use of fossil fuels. He's saying that there is empirical evidence that people like me are truly awful human beings and people like you. Does he even know anything about your life? He doesn't know anything about my life. If some of you know the activities that I've been involved in over the years concerning adoption and foster care, I wonder if he's participated in wonderful opportunities that bless humanity like that. It's just such a stupid, ridiculous blanket statement. But this is what we're up against. Do you understand? When you don't believe in God, because most on the other side of the debate do not. They do not. The broad-minded, the socialists, the Marxists, they certainly don't believe in a God like you and I might believe. And as such, they don't have a moral spine. So it's very easy for these people to lie because for them, the end justifies the means. And you have to understand that as we unpack this entire climate agenda from start to finish, as I attempt to do in the book. What you heard from Michael Mann, what you heard from Guterres, what you heard from AOC, what you heard from Al Gore are called fear appeals by psychologists. These are fear appeals. What is a fear appeal? It's often referred to as brainwashing or even mind control. There is unprecedented pressure placed upon individuals and the masses to dogmatically believe that humanity, in the case of global warming and climate change, is on the brink. Carbon dioxide, once taught to be life's essential ally, has now become an enemy. It's ridiculous. Earth's history of fluctuating temperatures has been blotted out and replaced with a sensationalized graph that spikes upward in the present to make it appear as if this is the hottest weather in the history of the world. I'll share a graph that counteracts that theory in just a moment. And of course, alternative deliberation is just not tolerated. We also have transgression. This is a hallmark of a cult. You are a carbon sinner. You are harming the planet. You are destroying the polar bear population, which, by the way, is not true. The polar bear population is thriving right now. It's flourishing right now. And anybody who wants to make this ridiculous claim, and I have an incredible story that Al Gore has used and others have used, claiming that polar bears are drowning. They are notorious swimmers. They can swim up to 100 miles a day. They swim like seals. But nonetheless, you are harming the planet. And isn't it interesting? Carbon dioxide, once thought to be essential for life, is now the enemy. Carbon dioxide is a life-giving gas. It's a trace gas in the atmosphere. 0.04% of the overall atmosphere is carbon dioxide. Of that, humans contribute through the burning of fossil fuels about 4%. So 4% of 0.04%. That's a number so small. But the carbons, there is a carbon cycle. It's like the water cycle, only it's slower. But they want you to believe that carbon dioxide has become the enemy. I know a lot of you are way into graphs. So here is a graph from geocraft.com, very thoughtful website. This is a graph that scientists would look at this in the past and say, well, of course. But nowadays, those same scientists who are activists don't want you to see this. This is the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and the temperature of the atmosphere over the past 600 million years. So we go from the Cambrian all the way to the Tertiary. And we're on the edge of the Tertiary today, so to speak. But if you could follow these lines, this black line is the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The blue line is the temperature of the atmosphere over all these millions of years. Right now, in our world today, carbon dioxide is about 400 parts per million. Now, the activists will tell you that's way too high. It's throwing the climate out of whack. And they will also tell you that this is the hottest weather in 135 years. And as such, if we only raise that temperature a bit more, they're looking at this 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold that we're fast approaching. And if we hit that mark, oh, all hell's going to break loose. That's what they tell us, because this is the hottest weather ever. But this graph flies in the face of all of that. I just want to say one more thing about life-giving CO2. We're at 400 parts per million right now. If we were to drop below 180 parts per million, it would be disastrous. Plant life would start to die. We do know that when greenhouses, commercial greenhouses, raise their CO2 levels, I mean, even the people growing cannabis these days are raising CO2 levels in their greenhouses. Why? Because the plants grow faster and more lush. It's the perfect environment. More CO2, more plant life. Now, let me go back to this slide for you just for a moment. From the Paleozoic to the Mesozoic, this was the time in which dinosaurs were on the planet. They were huge creatures. They required a lot of food. Doesn't it just make sense that CO2 levels will be much higher then in order to produce the kind of food necessary for them to thrive? So looking at this graph, in the Cambrian era, the Cambrian period, it was 7,000 parts per million. Then you can follow that black line. During the Carboniferous period, it dropped substantially, rose again in the Jurassic, and then dropped to the point at which we are today. To, you know, we can determine this through geology. CO2 levels were significantly higher than today, but look also at the blue line. That's the temperature graph. Look how much higher temperatures were. Incredibly warmer, more CO2, plant life thrived. The largest creatures the Earth has ever seen also thrived. And now we get to today, and you can see for yourself that we're at a point in time where CO2, relatively speaking, is low, as is the temperature. So when did CO2 become the enemy? 1987. This is right out of the United Nations book entitled Our Common Future. The World Commission on Environment and Development put this out in 1987. Our Common Future. If you by chance know someone, or perhaps you have this degree yourself, environmental sciences, if you graduated with an environmental science degree in the last 15, 20 years, you learned all about Our Common Future. It is held to this day by environmentalists as their version of the Bible. This book is a really big deal, and it spells out much of the plan. Again, this is 1987. For the first time ever, carbon dioxide became the enemy. Here's what Our Common Future says. All nations may suffer from the releases by industrialized countries of carbon dioxide and of gases that react with the ozone layer, and from any future war fought with the nuclear arsenals controlled by those nations. Okay, let's stop right there. That's one sentence. What you just read was the United Nations, Our Common Future, likening carbon dioxide to nuclear arsenals. Very clever. They're telling you carbon dioxide is so bad, it's on the level with nuclear weapons. Continuing, all nations will also have a role to play in securing peace, in changing trends, and in writing an international economic system that increases rather than decreases inequality, and that increases rather than decreases numbers of poor and hungry. Two sentences back to back from Our Common Future. They have just said that carbon dioxide will be reducing carbon dioxide will be essential to securing peace, to writing an international economic system that increases rather than decreases inequality. This is classic Marxism, that increases rather than decreases the number of poor and hungry. Carbon dioxide is like a nuclear bomb. Carbon dioxide is an enemy of peace. Carbon dioxide is an enemy of the economy, and carbon dioxide brings forth inequality. But remember, in all of this, there is also absolution. Absolution. So yes, you're a carbon sinner. Carbon dioxide is bad. You require a lot of it. But there is absolution, just like you find in so many of the cults. You can reduce your carbon footprint. You know, go out and plant a tree, or live in stack and pack housing, or, my goodness, you can purchase an electric car that you can't afford, or you can go vegan, or you can purchase carbon credits, or you can just become an activist. And the more you talk, the more you can feel good about yourself. And by the way, that photograph that I'm using, that is a solar panel that's charging multiple cars at a charging station. That solar panel could not charge all of those cars on its own. That solar panel does not work at night. That solar panel does not work at dusk. It does not work at dawn. It only works, does not work when there's clouds. It does not work when it's covered by ice. That power station, depending on where it's located, is likely primarily powered by natural gas. In Climate Cult, I talk a lot about electric vehicles. And I also talk about your right to own property. Because again, the subtitle is Exposing and Defeating Their War on Life, Liberty, and Property. Property, as you know, is also known as the pursuit of happiness. Property makes us happy. It doesn't matter if it's the shirt on your back, or the big screen TV you own, or the vehicle you own, or the house over your head. Doesn't matter. The roof over your head. Doesn't matter. Those things should make you happy. And you have a right to be happy through your property. So if you own an electric vehicle, I hope you're happy with it. I mean, I love my cars, so I hope you love your car. And I've been in some electric vehicles like a Tesla S. They're incredibly luxurious. The technology is off the charts. They're amazingly fast, which is what I really like. But please don't tell me how green your car is, because it's not. Manufacturing an electric vehicle is more emissions intensive than manufacturing a comparable gas or diesel powered vehicle. The emissions necessary to manufacture that vehicle from start to finish are so high, primarily because of the mining that's necessary for the lithium that's in the batteries. And I say batteries because, you know, your average Tesla has almost 2,000 small batteries. That's why they're incredibly heavy cars. A Tesla S weighs over 6,000 pounds. That's as heavy as a large truck. That's why the tires are always going out in those vehicles, because I shouldn't say going out, they're wearing out in those vehicles because they're so heavy. But they are emissions intensive to manufacture. Not only that, I want you to look at those cars being charged. They require a lot of energy in terms of charging that big battery unit. In fact, they require 50% of an average U.S. household's monthly energy bill. So whatever your energy usage is for a month, if you have an electric vehicle, it's going to increase your usage by 50%. That's the average electric vehicle that's being driven for 14,000 miles a year and your average U.S. household. If you purchase an EV and you drive it that much, your energy usage is going to increase by 50%. Right now, only 3, maybe 4% of all vehicles on the road are electric. Joe Biden recently in his State of the Union address said that by 2030, we're going to reduce our carbon footprint by 50%. And that's going to be accomplished, he implied, in large measure by the use of electric vehicles, the adoption of electric vehicles. Can you imagine if we're going to rely so heavily on electric vehicles, what that's going to do to our grid? It's going to suck all the power out of the grid. You want rolling blackouts? That's what you're going to get. This plan is untenable, and yet they're pushing so hard. Now let's talk about the vegan diets. This is from The Guardian in the UK. Recent article, vegan diet massively cuts environmental damage, study shows. So again, they're pushing you so hard to comply to their agenda. In terms of absolution, you will find it by going vegan. It will massively cut environmental damage. And here we go, back to the electric vehicles. This is from an organization called Fact Checks. And they do a fact check on how electric vehicles help to tackle climate change. And of course, what cult wouldn't exist without a promise of some type of utopia? For many cults, it's reincarnation. Many cults promise you heaven on earth. In fact, that's what Vladimir Lenin promised. And Vladimir Lenin was an environmentalist's environmentalist. I have source documents in my book illustrating that while his people were starving to death when he took over Russia, when his people were starving to death, he was busy writing environmental paper after environmental paper in an attempt to save the earth. It's bizarre. That's Vladimir Lenin. And by the way, it is true. It is true. The first Earth Day was celebrated on his centennial. But I digress, as I often do. Marx proposed this. Lenin tried to enact it. Stalin proposed this. Every communist dictator has always promised this to their people, that there would be a new world, a better world. The Soviets called it the new man. The WEF calls it, you will own nothing and you will be happy. This is the utopia that they're putting forward in order to bring more people in to their cult. And here we have it. The utopia involves something called sustainable development. Sustainable development will bring forth climate justice. Climate justice will bring forth a new era of social justice and social equity. Let me unpack sustainable development for you. I spend a lot of time on this in the book, but here are just some of the nuts and bolts. These are all quotes from Our Common Future, where not only did they trot out CO2 as an enemy, but they unleashed this proposition called sustainable development. They said sustainable development would meet the basic needs of all. It would provide the opportunity to fulfill aspirations for a better life. They also said that it would bring forth a new era of economic growth for the nations, where those poor would get their fair share. And of course, to do this, we would have to adopt lifestyles within the planet's ecological needs, or ecological means, I should say. Sustainable development can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. The branders at the United Nations have always been very, very clever. If we were to do a man on the street interview and I would just ask 10 different people, what is sustainable development? You would hear everything from recycling to buying an electric vehicle to going vegan. Those are just some of the ancillary fruits of sustainable development. But sustainable development is able to utilize this climate emergency to birth a world order that is void of the United States being the top dog. They want to take down the United States. They want to punish us because, as the most industrialized nation in the history of the world, with the strongest economy that the world has ever seen, with the most affluent lifestyles that this nation has, that this world has ever seen, they want to punish us because they don't think it's fair. And therefore, our use of carbon dioxide, which has so benefited the way we live, and by the way, it's not just the way we live, it's the fact that we've stopped two major wars, World War I, World War II. Had it not been for us, tyranny would have reigned. So we've stopped a couple of wars, but we have been the most charitable, beneficial nation in the history of the world. And I'm not just talking about the stuff that our government might hand out recklessly, usually, but I'm talking about individuals who have made money in this country and have been able to give it to others freely. See, they don't like any of that because they say, you people are too rich, you're too wealthy, it's not fair, we need to spread the wealth. And when it comes to reducing our personal carbon footprint here in the United States and moving into this new era where we're going to rely on solar and wind, we're going to get rid of coal, we're going to get rid of natural gas. It's all a pipe dream. But if we do go that route and adopt electric vehicles, if we do go that route, our energy grid is going to be so shaky, so sparse. You know, in California, it's already like this. I've seen the signs over the highway myself in the summer when we do have a heat wave. And energy in California is already so thinly stretched because California has so much, for example, natural gas under its own soil, but it refuses to use it any longer. California now imports gas from other states because they won't use what's under their own soil because they want to be green. So the grid is already stretched. And on super hot days, you'll see these electronic billboards over the freeway that says, do not charge your EV between 4 p.m. and 9 p.m. That's now. What's it going to be like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? If they can control energy, they can control us. It's just like in the Soviet Union. I have friends who lived during communism. And they will tell you, yeah, the rent was free, the electricity was free, the heating was free, but the places they lived in were crap. Oh, 20-story building, elevators aren't working, what else is new? Oh, at night, heat's turned off, go to bed with a parka, fur coat. If you can control the energy, you can control the people. And that's what these broad-minded thinkers, like Marx, like Engels, like others, have always sought. We are the problem. I think in the next episode, I'm going to talk more about that aspect of my book, Climate Cult, because you will be stunned and amazed when you hear, just as I was stunned and amazed, when you hear who the first person was who decided that they could use the environment as an effective weapon to bring down capitalism. And by the way, capitalism, that's a concept that was put forward by Marx. So that'll be in the next episode. In the meantime, I appreciate you spending a few minutes with me. I hope you found this to be beneficial. Please don't forget to subscribe, make sure you like, and I would appreciate it if you would share as well. And I look forward to our next meeting. God bless you, my friends. Thank you.